Welcome to Pastures of Plenty, a history of California farm workers. I'm Luis Valdez. It's often been said that as California goes, so goes the nation. If that's true, then all eyes are on the nation's top agricultural state, watching how it copes with a farm worker shortage and immigration issues. In this program, we'll hear about the present and the future of farm labor. Who are the new immigrants? What will be the effects of the new U.S.-Mexico border wall? What will unions do to reach the new immigrant farm workers? Do organic farmers treat their workers any better than conventional growers? Here to explore these and other questions is a chorus of voices, farm workers, authors, historians, and others who have made it their life's work to answer the question, how do we grow our food without exploiting the people who do the work? Here is producer Rachel Ann Goodman.
In the spring of 2006, millions of illegal immigrants and their supporters protested in the streets of the U.S., calling for reform of the nation's laws. It was also the first time in years farmers complained of a labor shortage because of tightened border controls. Their anger was aimed at a law passed by the Senate making felons out of anyone aiding illegal immigrants. Although the focus was on illegal immigration in general, one of the biggest blocks of workers represented among the marchers were farm workers. Not since the days of Cesar Chavez had so many marched in the streets. Normally, they had laid low, hoping not to be noticed by the immigration authorities. Finally, perhaps feeling they had nothing else to lose, they stood up to be counted. Most of these sounds were recorded on Cesar Chavez's birthday, March 31st, in the city of Salinas, California, home of some of the earliest strikes in labor history.
Hundreds of thousands marched in the streets of major cities like Los Angeles, Detroit, and Phoenix for the past few days.
We come together to say that we are workers, not criminals.
I think that what people really want to see is a comprehensive solution to the immigration issue. What they want to know is that you can earn a citizenship by working hard and by satisfying a number of requirements. And so there is a great deal of support for the AGS jobs bill. Even the farmers here support it as well. And so we're looking for a comprehensive solution to the
issue. What do you think the future is for farm workers in this country, in California particularly?
Well, if they make everybody a felon, I think you can forget about getting your crops harvested anymore. If they pass a better law that gives people a road to becoming legal, people will be much more likely to stand up for their rights and insist on being paid things like overtime and getting breaks and lunches and having water in the fields.
We need to support these people, and they're doing the job that nobody else wants to do. We need to support them. That's the bottom line. As far as supporting our illegal community, the way they call it, this is the biggest rally I've seen. This is the best thing that could ever happen to me.
How many people do you think are
here? I think there's like thousands here.
How does it make you feel to see this?
Proud.
Everyone suffers when people seeking to provide for their families are left at the mercy of criminals, are stuffed in the back of 18-wheelers, or abandoned in the desert to die. I've laid out a proposal for comprehensive immigration reform that includes three critical elements: securing the border, strengthening immigration enforcement inside our country, and creating a temporary worker program. These elements depend on and reinforce one another, and together they will give America an immigration system that meets the needs of the 21st century.
But the government did not pass immigration reform legislation as planned. The INS did, however, conduct numerous raids and deportations in California and Colorado in 2006. Now, plans are underway to build a 700-mile wall along the U.S.-Mexico border, costing somewhere between $2 and $4 billion. It is opposed by the American Farm Bureau and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. At the Eco Farm Conference at Asilomar in Pacific Grove, I meet Armando Antonio Mendez, age 34. He works for one of the few unionized organic strawberry farms in the Central Coast, Swanton Berry. 10 years ago, he was one of an estimated 700,000 people to cross the border illegally. With the help of a coyote smuggler, he crossed the border near Tijuana. He wandered for days without food or water, only to get caught and sent back 10 different times. Once he had made it to Northern California, however, he stayed. Jackie Olivares is Armando's co-worker at Swanton Berry. Her toothy smile and tall, lanky frame are regular features at the local farmer's market. Other days, she harvests and prunes alongside a mostly male work crew. Jackie's father came to the U.S. illegally to work the fields and saved enough over time to send his daughter to college so she could have other choices.
Why is it all farmers are, you know, white and all farm workers are Mexican? And I think a lot of people think because it's organic, that means that, oh, everything's taken care of. And it's not. It's not true. And I think that's really sad. I think a lot of people really worry about being a vegan and don't hurt animals, but don't think about, well, where are your vegetables coming from? And what about the people who are actually producing them for you? You care more about a dog not being hit than a person not, you know, making a good living and being treated like a normal person.
On a bright spring day in early March, I go to work in the artichoke fields north of Santa Cruz with Jackie and her co-worker, Luis Montoya. 30 years in the sun and wind have creased Luis's face with smile lines. He laughs often, even when the truck we're in fishtails in the mud and nearly gets stuck. The job at hand today is sorting and boxing artichokes. Luis's expert hands quickly pick out those with wormholes. If you've ever tried to raise a garden without pesticides, you know how hard that can be. Luis is a man who knows how to grow things well.
So right now they're sorting the artichokes, so we try to sort them by size. So for the main part, we try to do the 48s, which are a little smaller, and you get 48 in a box, and 36s. We also separate sometimes the ones that are open and buggy, and sometimes we use those for our own kitchen use. So right now that's what they're going through. It's just they've obviously harvested everything. They put them in bags and then they bring them out, and that's how they sort them out.
How much does a bag of those weigh usually to carry on your back? It's pretty heavy.
I would think it's pretty heavy. At least these boxes about 20 pounds. So I would think 30 or so. ¿Qué piensan que esas cuando están llenas la bolsa cuántas libras pesan tu pieza?
Depende si es.
Si los llenan.
Si es alcachofa grande es menos pesado porque se enguacala más, pero cuando
es bigger artichokes are actually lighter. Esta, but when it's a bunch of small
cuando
ones.
Es pura de esta pesa como unas 60 libras yo creo. La bolsa.
Leaning against the truck, I ask Luis Montoya what would make things better for farm workers like him.
Todos tenemos derecho a comer, entonces nosotros, todos, tanto yo vine sin papeles, vine buscando otra mejor vida. Lo mismo también ellos, igualmente también, o sea que.
So he believes that he has papers now, but he came without papers, and he feels that, you know, even though everyone comes here to give a better life, to have maybe just food, and to help their families have more options and just eating better and just having more options for a better life and opportunity, and, you know, that's all they basically is what people come here for.
Luis says the crackdown on immigration at the border is taking its toll here too.
Pues ahorita lo que se está viendo es que la inmigración ahorita está echando mucha gente para afuera y no está dejando entrar.
He would like to see people have papers, you know, because it would just be easier, and you know, and also maybe America, because it is a wealthy nation, it would be more sustainable and make more sense to have it grown here and pay people who are willing to come, not just from Mexico, any other country, to come and grow vegetables and fruits. And then he was saying the future, though, the way it's looking because of immigration, it's just getting impossible, and which is not working for the farmer either, because he's not having enough laborers to do the work, and so a lot of it is getting rotten, which basically not just affects the rancher, but as well as the workers, because then there's less wages or less money to work with.
Has that happened here, where you had to let things rot for lack of labor on the crew?
Yes, it has. Ha pasado aquí con la fresa, cuando no tenemos bastante gente para piscarlo todo, se ha tenido que dejar, ¿a que sí? ¿Con nomás con la fresa o con otras cosas? La mora a veces, ¿ah?
Bueno, ahorita como por la mora comienza, pues casi no se ha quedado, ¿verdad?
No, no se ha quedado, mucho,
pero la fresa también a veces que sí se necesita gente, pero ahorita te voy a de aquí para atrás. Casi no, pero no sabemos de aquí para adelante.
De mayo a junio, julio, es cuando hay mucha gente.
Yeah, from May to June, July, is when we're going to need a lot of people. And last year we had some issues, we got by. This year, who knows? It also rains, so who knows what's going to happen. Llovió el año pasado y otra vez, quién sabe qué va a pasar.
After the boxes are loaded, we head back to the highway to transfer them to Jackie's truck.
Try again.
Good thing.
Yeah, I like to bring this. Yeah.
Before we say goodbye, Jackie and Luis and their co-worker Francisco Vargas joke around about the upcoming weekend. Jackie says being the only woman on an all-male crew is just a sign that the future's here already, and that women like her can work alongside men in an easy, carefree manner.
I guess because they remind me so much of my family that from right away I just connected, and I don't feel like the only girl, really.
Yeah.
And I think it helps them anyway, because I think these are all fathers.
Yeah.
They want to help each other, and sometimes it's hard to always help another man. So it kind of allows them to show another side, I think. And so I think in that way it's very balancing.
For her, it's like having a family of uncles and fathers. And for them, it's been an education. At Swanton Berry Farm, this is Rachel Ann Goodman.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
The majority of U.S. farm workers are here illegally. As the borders have tightened, they've stayed longer in the United States. Their crossings have become more dangerous, with an average of 500 deaths per year since 2000. Historian Sandy Lydon, a professor emeritus at Cabrillo College in Aptos, California, wonders why those statistics don't cause a bigger stir.
When I see somebody bending over in a field picking strawberries, my back hurts for them. Because I've done that. And I know the skill and the effort it takes to do that. To me, we need to get so that everybody feels that, so that they don't just go by the field and say, oh, there's those people doing that work, instead of these huddled figures that are way off in a distance. Those are people. People like my grandfather, your grandfather, everybody's grandmother. People need to understand that. In California, it's really clear that, with very few exceptions, every immigrant group came in to the field.
Coming up right after a short break, we'll hear how the next generation of farm workers is responding to union organizing. Listening to Pastures of Plenty, a history of California farm workers. I'm Rachel Ann Goodman. Many women in the agricultural industry leave field labor to work in the packing sheds and food processing plants around Central California. Gabriela Lara works for Monterey Bay Bouquet in Watsonville, arranging flowers for a living. Her attempts to unionize her shop resulted in the company firing 40 employees. Her story begins like Armundo's, a dangerous trip across the border through the desert, in this case with her 5-year-old daughter in tow.
One time that she tried crossing the border, she slipped into a canal And it was her and her daughter was really scared. She was saying, oh, mommy, I don't want anything to happen to you.
Gabriela started working at Monterey Bay Bouquet 2 years ago.
When they're upset, they treat us bad, they yell at us, especially the foremen. Yeah, when there's a lot of work, yeah, they do pressure us. For example, they tell us, oh, look at your coworker, she's working, you know, she's doing it faster, how come you're not? And then the same workers, and they get back to them, telling them, oh, well, you guys should be doing more.
When Gabriela and her colleagues tried to get their co-workers to join the United Farm Workers Union, the company hired a consultant to pressure them to withdraw. Gabriela says she was told the company would withhold their employment records from the INS, proving they worked in the United States. The company, saying she lacked immigration papers, fired her, along with 100 other women. The election, however, was withdrawn.
Por la ayuda de... De todas las personas que nos apoyaron,
the union has already gone to our work, and about 4 months ago, the company fired lots of people from there, and the union went over there and helped us out get our job back.
After union picketing and public protests, Monterey Bay Bouquet rehired the workers they had fired.
They said because of their good heart, but I don't believe that.
Over at Coastal Berry in Salinas, one of the largest strawberry producers in the country, workers did get a union contract. Farm laborer and union organizer Eleuterio Vega says it's been a long, hard road to hold elections, but being a UFW workforce means medical benefits, better hours, and better working conditions.
Le batallamos mucho para meter la unión ahí. Duramos casi 10 años ahí batallándole cada año, nos estábamos organizando cada año y
When the union organizers talk with the workers of the various companies, the companies react by hiring consultants and trying to intimidate them by warning them that the company will face bankruptcy. The company will fire them all if they introduce a union. They tell them many things, that they will increase their salaries if they refuse to introduce the union. And the workers with that seem satisfied and give up the idea of a union. And that is why the owners react quickly and intimidate its workers. And that is why the other companies do not have a union. At Coastal Berry, we hardly have 3 years under contract with them. We had great battles with them, and the same will happen with the others.
Yo fui a la marcha y se juntó mucha gente.
But we still try to talk with our fellow workers of other companies so they will install a union. In years past, César Chávez fought for the campesinos, and people now begin to recognize that, because many people who arrive from Mexico are not aware of anything, as I say. And that day, lots of people congregated there, and the president of the union, Arturo, will push so there will be elections for the workers, something that now is very important. The people reacted very favorably that day at the mention of César Chávez. I had never heard of him. Now I know who he was. I asked my fellow workers, and I borrowed books and read them, and that's where I learned about him. When I arrived here in the U.S., I had never heard of him.
La gente que no quiere que venga mexicano a trabajar.
There are people who do not want Mexicans to come and work. What happens is that they never like the idea that we are here, but we risk ourselves by crossing the border and we are here. And I feel that they're wrong, because if we Mexicans do not come here, the U.S. will not remain as it is now. Those who come here do not see the workers picking strawberries or picking lettuce or broccoli, people who are doing heavy and poorly paid work.
Los que están ahí con la Casa Blanca que
It's very important that there is legalization and that the farmer pay better salaries to the workers. And this way, we will work well and at ease. Then there would be no need to spend money to pay soldiers near the border. If there is legalization, most people will work legally and will not have to struggle to cross the border.
Despite recent gains for farm workers in certain sectors of farming, such as berries and grapes, the new immigrant workers, many of them Indians from Oaxaca and Central America, are even more isolated than their Mexican counterparts. Many cannot speak English or Spanish, but Triqui or other indigenous languages. Photographer and historian Richard Stephen Street spent time in a ravine where workers had made a makeshift home.
So in North San Diego County, there are these camps scattered all over the places. What's interesting about these camps is they're all in the canyon bottoms and usually within shouting distance or at least easy viewing distance. On the hilltops surrounding them are million-dollar or multi-million-dollar homes, so that the disconnect between the reality of life in the canyons and life on the ridges is unbelievable. Well, to go into these canyon camps is really to experience innovation and perseverance and persistence on the most profound level. They live in the canyons because it's rent-free and because it's close to their work. And that's the difference between sending money home and not sending money home. One of them was in the middle of Camp Pendleton Marine Base, of all places, a camp composed completely of Oaxacans, which are indigenous Indians from southern Mexico. And I would go in there on Sundays with little bags of food and stay all day. And they had devised a very interesting washing system, diverting water from the creek bed into this improvised impound. And they would do their washing all day Sunday long and play a little basketball on a little dirt court that they had improvised in the trees. And then along about 4 o'clock, they would sit down to prepare their meal and also prepare their food for the next day's work in the strawberry fields. When they would take a plastic shopping bag from Safeway and light it on fire and drip the burning plastic onto the kindling and start their little cooking fire and then slowly over the next hour build the cooking fire up, all the time it's growing dark down in the canyon bottom. And finally, turn on their little transistor radio to listen to the local Mexican station, 1 hour of the Mexican station on battery while they were preparing their meal. And this was the height of their day. And then they would share their meal with me, and I would leave, and they would crawl into these little doghouse-sized hooches, basically the size of doghouses, looking exactly like doghouses, and kept off the ground by plastic milk carton carriers because the place would flood every so often. And that's how they kept dry. And they would lock their little hooch in the morning and go off to work all day, and they would come back in the evening and live down in the bottom of the canyons. Well, this is the Grapes of Wrath all over. I don't know exactly what kind of label you'd put on it. It's the same pattern we see again and again. The poor coming north, basically to help their families, basically sacrificing themselves, and basically building their little communities out of nothing, out of surplus packing crates and bubble gum and string and plastic. And these places exist all over California during the harvest in the Napa Valley. If you go down by the river or even go out into any clump of bushes, you'll find people there existing the same way. They're hidden from sight, and if you don't know they're there, you drive by, you have no idea what's going on. I wouldn't call it American apartheid or California apartheid, but I would call it a gigantic disconnect between the system of agricultural labor and the fruit and vegetable we buy on the in Safeway and in our local supermarkets.
That's Richard Steven Street, author of Beasts of the Fields, A History of California Farm Workers. Labor author Frank Bardicky says the only thing that will help curb the flow of undocumented workers is serious economic development in Mexico.
There really is no way to stop Mexicans from coming to the United States to work as long as this economic situation in Mexico is as bad as it is. What you have is a situation where you have the richest country in the history of humanity right next to a very poor country. There has never been a juxtaposition that comes as close to this. You also, complicating the situation, you have the fact that there's historical memory of a time when the southwestern part of the United States was a part of Mexico. So when people come from Mexico to the United States, they not only come to a place where, since the 1920s, wages have averaged about 10 times more than they are in Mexico, but they have a feeling of returning to a place where they've been before. There are communities in Watsonville itself, there have been folks that have come from two small towns in Michoacan to Watsonville who started coming before the Mexican Revolution, at the turn of the 20th century. They've been coming for that long. The connections between Mexico and the United States are very, very strong. They go way back. They are not going to be stopped. There is no wall high enough. There's no law clever enough. There's no army big enough to stop Mexicans from coming to the United States to work. The only thing that'll stop it is if there is serious economic development in Mexico. And what's happening in Mexico is really the reverse. And public policy in the United States is pushing it in the reverse direction because of NAFTA. Because NAFTA was incredibly damaging to the rural economy of Mexico. In Chiapas, Iowa corn can be sold more cheaply than Chiapan corn. And that's because Iowa corn is incredibly highly subsidized, highly mechanized corn. And because NAFTA stopped the tariff that Mexico used to have on U.S. corn. So that wrecks the little corn farmer in Chiapas and means that it's more likely that he is going to have to come to the United States to work.
Jim Hightower is the former agricultural secretary of Texas and a radio commentator. I caught up with him recently at the EcoFarm conference at Asilomar, California, and I picked his brain about the challenges in reforming the way we grow our food.
Well, we have to get back to the notion that agriculture is the is not just a business, it's a culture. And to a notion that based on smaller scale operations than these agribusiness giants operate, your Del Monte's and Kraft's now, and you know, and all the rest of them are under contract to Walmart and this sort of thing. To a more humane level of food production that recognize both the that is not just organic in terms of not using chemicals, but also organic in terms of the agricultural community, which includes not only the farm families, but the farm worker families as well, and that we're all a part of this together. And smaller scale operations have more potential than the absentee landlord type operations to be respectful of the workforce. Because they're smaller. You're going to know them by name. You're going to know their families. You might even go to church with them. So your kids are going to be in school with them. So it's got more possibility. We continue to do something remarkably stupid, which is to allow our food production to move offshore. This is not widgets. This is not computers. This is our food. This is a national security issue, and also it's just a common sense issue. We have highly productive farmers and farm labor. We have incredibly good soil and incredibly good weather that few other places on the earth get to have. And we've set some standards over the years. We're not where we should be, but in terms of pesticides and toxics generally in food, that should be world standards, but instead we're allowing the corporate interests to move the food production, driven by the Walmarts of the world, to places like China. We allowed China to come into the World Trade Organization, and they persuaded, they being the powers that be, the fruit and vegetable producers here in California and up in Oregon and Washington State, to support that, saying, look, we're going to open up this big China market and you can export your stuff over there. What they didn't tell them was China at that time was producing seven times more fruits and vegetables than we do in this country. What we did was open our market up, and that's what's going to happen. They're going to dump it in here from China, just as they've been dumping steel and textiles and everything else. It's going to happen to our food economy, and we're going to drive those, and those are largely family producers, and particularly in fruits and nuts and that sort of thing. There can be smaller scale operations. We're going to drive them out of business. In the name of what? It's a hoot to me to see, and particularly here in California, you know, Republicans scrambling around saying, oh, we can't have all these immigrants. And then the moment you try to shut off the immigrants, then they scramble and say, we got to have immigrants, you know, because who's going to do this work at this wage? You know? And you hit on a very important point there. They keep saying, well, Americans won't take these jobs. Americans won't take the jobs at the price that's being offered, which is beneath a living wage. The only way it's going to work is if people don't have a need to come here, if they, because, you know, you talk to, and most of my experience has been with Mexican Americans in Texas and in my agriculture days, and you talk with those families, well, you know, they long, they yearn for back home, and after all, that's where their families are, their whole support system, their culture, everything's there, and they're stuck in Houston or something, you know, and so. It's not like they just want to come here to America because they get to go to Disneyland or something. They're here for economic reasons. And if we create a situation, it's not our responsibility to do it by ourselves, but it ought to be our policy to foster this in places like Mexico so that our corporate elites don't cut deals with their elites that cut out the vast majority of the people and impoverish a majority of the people in those countries. If we changed our policies and changed the IMF and World Bank policies and NAFTA and all of that, then it would be possible to create an economic situation did not require these folks to have to leave their homes and families and come hundreds of miles to try to eke out a living in farm labor, for God's sake. We've got to create this new progressive politics that circumvents the money. And by the by, this is happening. This is beginning at the grassroots level, and that's what's this is the good news of all of this. There is a new politics that's being built. You don't hear about it. It's not being built by members of Congress or governors. It's being built by grassroots groups that are forging these coalitions, and including the Farm Workers Union as a part of a lot of those efforts. And this is everything from living wage campaigns in the cities to the public financing of elections, which now eight states have.
More discussion about the future of farm workers right after this break. Stay tuned. You're listening to Pastures of Plenty. I'm Rachel Ann Goodman.